Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome in, hour number three, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show, Tuesday edition. I hope all of you are having a fantastic time. If you're just tuning in with us, Buck has joined the ranks of the COVID infected. Last week it was me with what we believe is Omicron. This week it is Buck. He is in his New York City apartment doing the show remotely after finding out yesterday that he also had been bitten by the Omicron bug. Buck, for those of us people just joining us right now, how are you feeling?
I'm all right. It's kind of like wimpy COVID compared to what I had in March of 2021. So I'll say that. It's a lot less symptomatically. A little bit of weakness. Look, everything that you read about with what the symptoms are, that's what I've got. I was telling Clay before, if this were 2019, I would be pushing through the week with a cold in my mind. That's what I would think.
Not even thinking about it, hardly.
Not even thinking about it. I'd be like, you know, there's no way I'm missing any work for this or anything else. But because of COVID, and because if you have COVID and you're near anybody and you know it, it's, oh my gosh, you're killing grandma. I have to be in quarantine until Friday, which to me just seems, I mean, probably I could get away with Thursday because I first symptoms came about a little bit late on Sunday, but Friday, right? But Clay, at some point, people just need to recognize this thing's never going away. The vaccines don't keep you from getting it. And we're dealing with a paradigm that is very similar to what the seasonal flu has been now for a long time. If you're at risk, get a shot that'll help you out. It's not perfect, but it might help you out a bit. For the rest of us, you know, plenty of fluids, rest, and get back in the fight as soon as you can. That's it, everybody. You know, rub some dirt on it. Give me a break.
I had it last week. I was, for about 2 days, I would say I could feel that I had it. I am 100% as if I never had it at all. By the end of last week, I was. And that's the way it is for most people who get what we presume is Omicron. For people out there like, you don't know for sure you had Omicron. That's right. My particular COVID was not treated and analyzed to see which variant I had. But given, same thing for Buck, given the fact that 98 to 99% of all COVID infections at this point in time are Omicron, it's worth presuming that it is, in fact, Omicron.
Isn't it funny, Clay? Both you and I now have had COVID twice. Okay.
That's
so
right.
We're sitting here as two guys. We're talking to everybody about the COVID restrictions and what's going on and Fauciism. And after all that, after all the mask up between bites on planes, I've been subjected, because I live in New York City, to a vaccine mandate, a very strict one. After all the nonsense, I got sick anyway twice. What difference has it really made for people to go through so much of this mitigation? I mean, other than shots for those who are vulnerable, who are at high risk, everything else we've done has just been completely ineffective, entirely ineffective.
There's no doubt. And by the way, we are scheduled to be joined by the Attorney General of Virginia, the newly inaugurated Attorney General of Virginia, at the bottom of this hour, just so you know, because it's been a big story, what Glenn Youngkin and his team have been doing, the Lieutenant Governor and the Attorney General there. Be joined by him here coming up in a little bit. Also, if you're just tuning in, we have spent time talking about the charade that is going on in the United States Senate right now, where we already know that Democrat attempts to remake voting bills are going to fail because both Joe Manchin, the senator from West Virginia, and Kyrsten Sinema, at least maybe more than that, but both of those Democratic senators have said they will not support changing the filibuster for purposes of passing voting bills. And so all of this is just one long, big advertisement for Democrats and their friends in the media to pretend that our democracy is at stake and under siege and all those things, not actually going to have any substantive impact. It's all a big song and dance. So that's what's going on. We'll talk, I'm sure, some about that during the course of this week as Democrats continue to create those storylines. But I wanted to hit you with this, Buck. I teased this as we went to break. So the NHL, National Hockey League out there, for those of you who don't care at all about sports, the NHL has announced that they have got all of the data so far from this season because they're testing players on a regular basis. The NHL had 100% essentially vaccination rate. Every player, every coach, every team official, all of them were vaccinated for COVID. They announced today 73% 73% of all of the players on the league's roster have tested positive for COVID this season. And approximately 60% of those people have tested positive for the last 5 weeks. Okay? So, why use this as an example? Because we have been told for months now, basically for a year, by Dr. Fauci, by Rochelle Walensky, and by Joe Biden, that if everybody in this country were vaccinated, that there would be no issue with COVID. In fact, that's why they've tried to demonize and say that we're having a pandemic of the unvaccinated. It's why Joe Biden said that we're going to have a winter of death. That's what he's tried to say as an example of what was happening because people were unvaccinated. Well, let me just use this, Buck. I mean, this is an interesting subset because we don't have great data, unfortunately, for the 330 million Americans as a whole. But we do have great data for the NHL. The NHL got 100% of its players and everybody surrounding them vaccinated, and 73%, we're only halfway through the season, by the way, 73% of the league's rosters, the players, have tested positive, including 60% over the last 5 weeks. How is this not, Buck, perfect evidence? Maybe even far more representative, less representative, right? Because these are young, healthy players. That the vaccination rates do not in any kind of substantive way change the outcome when it comes to spreading this COVID, and that therefore for many young and healthy people, there's virtually no benefit at all to actually getting vaccinated if you have zero risk of actual serious health complications, which these guys clearly did. What in the world are we doing arguing that vaccination has in any way made them safer or, as a consequence, made anybody else safer?
Here's, if they were really interested in saving lives and not catering to neuroses, not maintaining control and therefore power, if this was truly, first and foremost, primarily about saving lives, given what we know, including this NHL data, the public health authorities, Fauci, Walensky, all of them, and the Democrat Party, Joe Biden himself, would come out and say, okay, we have seen the numbers. We understand the data isn't what we thought it would be. And by the way, that's putting it gently. I'm trying to be charitable here. But now we understand the push needs to be, please, every single person who is over the age of 65, every single one of you, please get the shot. Please get the shot. All right, we understand we made a mistake pushing it on five-year-olds. We understand we were being crazy pushing it on professional athletes in their 20s. We get it. I mean, they wouldn't say that, but that's the basic takeaway. If this were really about saving lives, they would admit the error of both messaging and resource deployment, and they would essentially embrace the focused protection strategy that was outlined in the Great Barrington Declaration going on now, you know, 18 months ago, perhaps, about 18 months ago. I think that's right. And Clay, you also see another phenomenon that's very troubling, and it's people when they talk about the science and they speak of the consensus around all of this. Notice how that gives it a certain power. You can't disagree with Biden. You can't disagree with the NHL mandate. It's the science. There's consensus behind it. Essentially, the power of the mob or the group is what they're calling on to make you bend the knee and do it. And then what you find is that when they've relied on the mob and the consensus science-based approach, and it turns out to be false, guess what, Clay? Nobody's really responsible for it, right? We were just going along, man. We just did what the experts told us to do. Sorry if we twisted or even broke your arm and kicked you out of your job. You know, sorry if we really had these negative consequences for you. It was the consensus at the time. Consensus is a way of leveraging power against people instead of making an argument. And also, in some ways, as perniciously, it is something that undermines any accountability for what's done. Like, who's responsible, Clay? Like, if you're an NHL player, you're made to get the shot, you got sick anyway, who do you get mad at?
It's a fantastic question. And also, the argument of scientific consensus misses the point that scientific consensus is also wrong very frequently, which is why we have the scientific method. Buck, I use this example quite a bit because as a parent, I remember it, but it was different for me. We have been wrong on which direction to put babies in the crib on, Buck. Think about this. Like, that is maybe one of the most essential things that you would want to know if you were a parent. you are supposed to put your baby, and I'm going to screw this up, so somebody make sure you look it up, because I haven't had a baby in a while now. If I remember correctly, and a lot of those nights have all blended together, now you are supposed to put the baby on the back, right, to avoid SIDS. When you and I were children, Buck, they told parents the exact opposite. They said you're supposed to put babies on their stomach, right? Now they have come back and said, wait a minute, all of that advice we gave to all of the parents out there, it was actually the exact opposite of what we told you. We got it 100% wrong. So you have to challenge conventional authority, even something that theoretically is as important as which direction do you put the baby down in the baby bed. They got 100% wrong for our generation, Buck, and then they flipped it for the generation of me now being parents. So they actually told parents something that made it more likely that their kids were going to die of sudden infant death syndrome. And then the experts said, oh, our bad, we're actually flipping it to the other side now. And that in and of itself is pretty crazy that we would ever have ended up in this situation in the first place.
They put doctors on TV in commercials to smoke cigarettes and say there's no bad health effects. In fact, it opens up your lungs. They have been wrong so many times on issues of science, and especially when it's about consensus. You know, you don't have to convince anybody, or you don't have to convince anybody that if they have a certain kind of bacterial infection, right? They go into the doctor, they say, hey, you got a staph infection. You're going to take antibiotics because, you know, those antibiotics are going to help you. You know, if you're in a really bad space, you understand that. There doesn't have to be an argument around it. But on areas where there is argument, what you see is there can be the false consensus used to push policies. And then there's never any accountability. Back to what I was saying before. Perfect example of this. The food pyramid. Remember the food pyramid? And it had 6 to 12. I learned this as a kid in grammar school. I remember this. 6 to 12 servings. It was everywhere. The food, you don't really see it anymore. 6 to 12 servings of grains. That's a great, yeah. Have 6 to 12 servings of white rice and white bread and, you know, other starchy grains every day. It's a great way to get toward diabetes and obesity at a very young age. Not a great way to actually eat healthfully. Same thing with eating eggs. Remember, eggs were supposed to give you high cholesterol. False. Eggs do not give you high cholesterol. But I remember that. Oh, don't eat too many eggs, Clay. You're going to have high cholesterol. That was the science.
It's true. The science is often wrong, which is why we have to constantly challenge the science. And if you ever question that, just go back and read all the advice that they were giving you for COVID in March of 2020 and look at how much of it has changed. Chronic pain, by the way, may be the most disabling sensation you can experience. It holds you back from living your best life in every way. If there was a way to reduce that pain or remove it altogether, how much better would life be? Well, one very viable solution comes from Relief Factor. Created by doctors and perfected over 15 years of scientific research, Relief Factor is a 100% free drug product that was made for you, easy to obtain too. Our friends at Relief Factor developed a 3-week quick start pack. You take Relief Factor 3 times a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner for 3 weeks. You'll know if it works for you. Hundreds of thousands of people have tried, and about 70% of them have gone on to order more. That's amazing odds. Relief Factor works for 7 out of 10 people. Are you one of those 7 who will live their life in less pain? If so, Buck, how do you get hooked up?
Join the more than 500,000 people and order the 3-week quick start for only $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF to get the $19.95 3-week quick start developed for you. Go to relieffactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF. Relief Factor, feel the difference. I think this is a good thing. Welcome back to the Clay and Buck Show. I think this is good. Formerly the worst mayor in America. I don't think there's anybody else who could take that title from him. I think the single worst mayor in the country is no longer the mayor of New York City, Bill de Blasio. He did run for president highly unsuccessfully at one point. I mean, he is an unselfconscious weirdo, to be sure, but he thinks that he has a political constituency, maybe just not in the state of New York, because Bill de Blasio For all my WORNYC folks, you know, we're all breathing a sigh of relief, although Adams, we'll talk more about that, not so good so far. De Blasio says he's not actually going to run for governor here. Play it.
We said we were going to take on inequality. Naysayers said it couldn't be done, but we proved together we could make a big change. Now, I made my fair share of mistakes. I was not good with groundhogs at all. Probably shouldn't have gone to the gym, but you know what? We changed things in this town. We changed policing to make it fairer. We showed you could do big things, Green New Deal, making this city greener and cleaner for the future. So this is the right place for me to share some news with you. No, I am not going to be running for governor of New York State, but I am going to devote every fiber of my being to fight inequality in the state of New York.
Clay, can I just say, this guy, he did change the city. He made everything about it worse. But this is a classic thing you see with a lot of Democrat politicians. No matter how much destruction they hath wrought, they think that they did a good job and they should be in power going forward.
Well, here's the downside, I would say, associated with de Blasio not running, because I think you have to put it into context with Letitia James deciding not to run either. Is Kathy Hochul in such an overwhelmingly popular position and in such a preferred political posture that everybody is terrified of her? And if so, what does it say about New York that Hochul, who I think is worse than Andrew Cuomo in terms of many of her decisions, certainly does not appear to at least be as smart or politically adroit, whatever you think of Andrew Cuomo. And I think, make no mistake, he was an awful governor. But it seems like everybody's just getting out of her way and acknowledging that she is going to win the Democratic nomination without even much of a challenge here.
I also think that, I mean, you know, looking into what we'll be dealing with De Blasio, the reason I said I think it's a good thing is it's great that he's not going to be mayor. And I think it's good he's probably not running for governor. But then again, we're going to see this guy on MSNBC like every 5 minutes for the next 10 years.
I don't even think he'll do well there.
He's a pretty smooth commie. I got to tell you, he does well with the doctrinaire limousine lib set. They like this guy because he's such a phony and yet so utterly devoted to the con of he cares so much about inequality. You know, this guy, it's a guy who has, you know, was getting all these big rental checks from his properties that he owns during the pandemic while he's making sure that other people who maybe only have one rental property couldn't evict the tenants that weren't paying them. De Blasio is the absolute worst of the Democrat Party in so many ways. But what you realize is they never think they've done enough damage, Clay. They never think we've suffered enough from their bad decisions.
Thankfully, we're starting to reverse some of that damage. When we come back on the flip side here, we're going to be joined by the Attorney General of Virginia, newly inaugurated, to talk about some of the choices that he is making. But first, not a day go by without some computer hacker out there trying to break into your company database and grab a hold of your data. That's valuable to them because they use this info to make bogus accounts in your name, open accounts, and buy products until the activity gets shut down. That's why you need to make sure that you have LifeLock to help protect you. No one can prevent identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but you can help protect what's yours with LifeLock by Norton. Join now and save 25% off your first year by using the promo code CLAY. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or head to lifelock.com and use the promo code CLAY for 25% off. One more time, go to lifelock.com, use the promo code CLAY, C-L-A-Y, for 25% off. Do it today. Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. We are joined now by Jason Mayarez. He is the newly elected and now inaugurated Attorney General of the state of Virginia. Jason, thanks for making time with us. I'm sure it's been a whirlwind. My first question for you, campaigning is tough. You're in the middle of the battle day in and day out. Was there a moment during your campaign where you thought, hey, we may really do this. We may sweep the governorship, the lieutenant governorship, and the AG's office. Was there a moment that crystallized for you when it all seemed very possible?
Oh, wow, Clay. I would say, you know, Glenn and Winsome and I did a rally in Richmond the same day as President Obama. this is probably the first or second week in October. I was on a Saturday. And when we saw that the crowd size for Obama was about a third of what he had 4 years prior when he had campaigned, and that we, with no celebrities, I mean, Terry McAuliffe brought in every single celebrity. I think he may even had Pharrell there, but he had President Obama. At VCU, which is right in the heart of Richmond, very liberal campus, a campus of probably 18 to 20,000 students attend VCU. And we had as many, I think we had about 5 or 6,000 people. We had more people at our rally than theirs. That's when I realized there is something happening in Virginia. People were just sick and tired of this far-left liberal monopoly that we had in Richmond, complete control over the last 2 years. And I told people, even before this election, listen, Virginia is not a red or a blue state. It's a common sense state. And common sense has gone out of the window the last 2 years in Richmond with the one-party rule we had by the far-left Democratic Party. And so that's when I knew. And I knew we were drought-drawing just with Glenn Winsome and I, crowds bigger than President Obama and so many other celebrities there to campaign for McAuliffe. That's when I felt there is something real happening, and there was such momentum, and I felt like there was just going to be a wave taking us ashore, and that's ultimately what happened. And we're thrilled that I'll be inaugurated and be ready to serve.
Attorney General Meara, it's Buck. Thanks for being with us the first time here on the show. I know that you have started two investigations, one into the Virginia Parole Board and one into Loudoun County Public Schools right away. Can you just tell us what's behind these investigations and why are you launching them?
Well, the first one, the Parole Board, you had once the far-left liberal majority got control, they started putting in wokesters and social justice warriors on the Parole Board, where they were letting out cop killers, murderers, and rapists out sometimes with decades on their sentence and then not even notifying the victims. Well, that's against Virginia law to fail to notify the families of the victims. So you had a case, Patrick Schooley, who had gotten not one, not two, but three life sentences without the possibility of parole for the brutal home invasion and rape and murder of a 78-year-old grandmother, Bessie Roundtree. And Bessie's family found out about it when they heard about it on the nightly news. And you had countless cases. So that was the first, and it really summarizes criminal first, victim last mindset that we've been dealing with in Virginia the last 2 years, which not surprisingly, now our murder rate has become the highest it's been in decades. And then the Loudoun County School Board was, you had a tragic incident of an individual, a brutal sexual assault that happened against a 14-year-old girl inside of a bathroom at its Loudoun school, and the school administrators simply then transferred the individual, the perpetrator, into a second school in which a second alleged assault happened, and then had the temerity of the school board sitting up at a public meeting and saying, we don't have any record whatsoever of any sexual assaults happening. And so in the Virginia Constitution, parents have a fundamental right to the care and upbringing and education. And you have a right to an education in the Virginia Constitution as well. Well, that first step is when you drop your child off to school is to know that they're going to be safe. And the fact that we had possible school administrators playing politics with our children's or our kids' safety, that's a huge problem. And so some of it dates back to the Democrats when they had control past the bill that ended the mandatory reporting requirement of sexual assault in schools. And so you had a lot of politicians out here trying to turn Virginia into California. You had Virginians that really revolted at that in November. And we're trying to now push back and undo some of these policies that really made Virginians less safe, including our school kids. And that's the realm. Rarely is there ever accountability and transparency in government. My goal is to bring some accountability and transparency so this never, ever, ever happens again.
We're talking to the Attorney General of Virginia, Jason Meiaras, who is part of that trio that shocked so many people across the political establishment. Jason, how much of a lesson can the National Republican Party take from what happened in Virginia? How replicatable do you think your success is on a nationwide basis? And how much is unique to the particular politics of Virginia? How much of a lesson can you be as we move towards 2022 for other political parties? And how much are they asking you for advice?
Well, listen, I think there is a lot of what happened here was the far left got power and really exposed themselves. And Americans reject wokeism. They don't like it. They don't like to have people that see everything through society through the lens of race. And they certainly don't like, if there's any silver lining of the school shutdowns, is that kids are bringing home their homework and their school curriculum, and parents are seeing what was being taught in our schools, and it created great, great concern. And I could tell you, that doesn't mean we don't teach all of our history, including the worst chapters, but what it does mean is that somebody like myself, in which, you know, my mother fled communist Cuba as a scared 19-year-old homeless and penniless teenager who didn't know where she was going to get her next meal. And the fact that she was able to come to this country and see, you know, 56 years later, almost to the day that she left, see her son get elected attorney general. I love to say America has given more second chances to more people from more background, more faiths, more races than any country in the history of the world. We are that last best on earth, last best hope on earth. We may be imperfect, and we don't never shy away from talking about where we have fallen short of our ideals, but we are overwhelmingly a force of good in this world. We sure as heck are not communist China. And so people want our history, all of our history, to be taught. So I think parental empowerment is such an important part the National Republican Party should not be afraid of, because when Terry McAuliffe on debate stage with my dear friend Glenn Youngkin said, hey, parents should not have any role in the saying of what's being taught in their school, he said the quiet part out loud. We've seen policy that essentially told parents, sit down, be quiet, you don't have any say. And what we really stress is we're about empowering parents, not far-left liberal school boards that are more concerned about pushing a social, far-left political ideology on our kids than our parents. Parents know best for their kids. Empower parents. That, I think that's one of the charges. And then don't be afraid to push back on this far-left wokeism that we've seen that is so encaptured the Democratic Party. Today's Democratic Party is not your grandparents' Democratic Party. It is so far to the left, it's almost unrecognizable. You should not be afraid to call them out. Don't be afraid to call them out on this criminal first, victim last mindset. Don't be afraid to call them out for going woke. I think that's the recipe for people running for office at any level across this country.
Attorney General for the state of Virginia, Jason Miyares. Mr. Attorney General, thank you so much for being with us on Clay and Buck. We appreciate it.
Hey, big fan. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, sir. You know, Clay, so I'm homesick, but you know what the good news is, my friend? I'm getting a great night's sleep anyway, because I've got the whole MyPillow set up in here, man. I've got my pillows. I got the Giza Dream sheets. I put on the My Slippers in the morning, so while I'm walking around coughing a little bit, at least I'm nice and cozy. MyPillow products are incredible. The pillows that started it all are amazing. The towel sets, the slippers. And right now, we've got an incredible deal for folks on the Giza Dream sheets, which is what I'm sleeping on, you're sleeping on. These are ultra soft and breathable, but very durable, luxurious finish. Clay, how do people get hooked up with these Giza Dream sheets courtesy of MyPillow?
Great offer right now. You can buy one, get one free with the promo code Clay and Buck. All MyPillow products come with a 60-day money-back guarantee. All you have to do is go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener specials to get the Giza Dream sheets. Buy one, get one free with code Clay and Buck, or you can call 800-792-3269. That's MyPillow.com. Use the code Clay and Buck.
Closing up shop here shortly on the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton show. For me, the quarantine edition, but no different than the normal show, just not able to socialize. But you guys are all keeping me company across the country in all 50 states and around the world for our digital listeners, so thank you so much for that. Clay, I'm gonna have this Omicron thing beat in no time, dude. You set the standard here. You crushed Omicron like the filthy commie virus that it is. And I'm on my way. I think by Thursday or Friday, I'm going to be ready to start doing some of those inverted push-ups that I do all the time in my imagination.
Let me just say this, by the way. You're wearing a scarf indoors. Is this a... I thought at first that it might be some sort of jacket. The indoor scarf solo in the apartment. Is this a regular move of yours? Is this COVID related? Like, what is the,
you know, Travis, I thought we were in the, like, the quarantine trust tree. I thought we were in the nest. I didn't know.
I'm just curious. Is this to wrap around your neck if perchance you start to get a bit chilled?
It's a little cold in here. It's a little drafty. Okay. And, I've got my slippers on to keep my feet nice and toasty. So maybe we throw on a little indoor scarf action. Maybe I eat mayonnaise with my French fries. I culturally appropriate as necessary.
I don't know what I think about the indoor scarf. I mean, it'd be one thing if it were like, hey, you just came in from a cold weather's eve and, you know, it's a family gathering and you know you're going to go back outdoors. But we've been doing a show for 3 hours. You've been indoors the whole time. And I really did. I noticed a different color than the shirt. And I was like, oh, that must be just some sort of jacket. But now I'm looking, I mean, that's clearly a scarf that you are wearing indoors for 3 hours.
As long as it's not an ascot, I think it's okay.
Ascot would have been, or if you'd had a top hat or a monocle, I would have certainly been questioning
what exactly you do. I feel like your fashion choices, when you are fighting the pandemic, good sir, are beyond reproach. As I'm sitting here in my it's also good though. It's always good. I got my slippers on. I got my Tommy John sweatshirt on, so I'm looking good there. The scarf is, it's a statement. It's a statement. I'm not an indoor scarf guy when there are people that can see me, but I'm glad that we bring everybody right in the center of the trust tree. It's all right. It's just me, Clay, and a few million of our closest friends. It's all good. Everybody can know.
Has anybody in the studio, can you guys actually see Buck or can you just hear him? I don't know how the technology works here. Do you get to see? You can see him? Oh, they can't see him. So I was curious, like, yeah, I thought, I know it's a radio, it's a theater of the mind here, but I wasn't sure exactly how the technology worked because Buck hasn't, I mean, honestly, you haven't had to do so far. This is the first time you've had to do the show from home, right? Like we haven't, otherwise you're normally in a studio just a couple blocks away.
Yeah, yeah. I've got a great studio in Midtown Manhattan, thanks to Premier Networks. It's a beautiful studio. But I remember early on in the pandemic, when it was clear New York was just about to shut down, I was diving deep into my closet to get, you know, radio gear and this and that. I built a home studio for TV and radio, and I am not my nickname is not MacGyver. I will just tell you, despite having worked at the CIA, I make a mean latte, but I'm not a tech guy, and I had to put all this stuff together. It was remarkable though how many people were able to sort of just figure out the technology of work from home right away. If we hadn't had that, Clay, if we hadn't had super high speed internet and Zoom, I think that the pandemic, the lockdowns wouldn't have lasted as long because it would have been untenable, right? It's almost because we can do so much from home now with no difference in quality, not just in media, but in so many professions, people were like, eh, maybe we're not going to the office the same way. It's totally changed.
I think not only that, Buck, but the people who are the most able to do that are the people that are the most politically powerful in our society. So that was so many people, they said, oh, I'm going to go home. I'm going to quarantine. I'm going to take this virus seriously. And then you would say, okay, what are you doing about food? And you're like, oh, I'm still ordering it out. Well, what are you doing about things that you need for inside the household? Well, I'm still ordering from Amazon. So all of these quote unquote elite level workers who are able to work remotely technologically, they basically had an entire servant class working for them. And they were able to continue to make their normal salaries. Their lives got better. You don't have to commute anymore. And so I think you're right. If this had happened, let's say 10 years ago, before the prevalence of high-speed internet, reliable Wi-Fi, all of those things that you could easily count on, I do think the way that people responded to COVID would have been quite a bit different because the people squealing more would have been that professional class, which wasn't able to work outside of their offices.
I mean, Skype video used to be something that you could use, and it was always, if you tried to use it for TV purposes, say, it was always unreliable. You'd have interference. It would freeze constantly. That, you know, they're going back now to early days of Skype video. Same thing with, you know, now they have Zoom and all these different programs. Another thing I'm finding that's so funny, Clay, is, you know, you get all the people that are, and of course, it's very nice whenever you're sick. If I had a cold, if I had thrown my back out, you know, it's nice when people say, hey, how you doing? But I find it amazing how many people say, do you know where you got it? And this is a thing with COVID specifically that I think has filtered into our conversations here. It's like, what am I supposed to say? I made out with a stranger in a bar and I think she gave it to me. Like, I have no idea where I got this. Like, it's you spread this in aerosolized. I could have gotten it from someone I was in the elevator with. I could have gotten it from somebody, that I
in
walked
the gym.
Past.
You could literally have gotten it any point of your life when you're outside of your apartment. And even depending on how the filtration systems are in your apartment, you might even get it just sitting on your couch, depending on where you live.
Yeah, it's so highly transmissible. I mean, if you want to get a sense of what a truly high transmissibility aerosolized virus looks like. If you look at some of the studies that have been done, folks, on measles among people that don't have immunity or vaccination in an enclosed space, it's stunning how fast that thing spreads. I mean, if you're in the room with somebody and you're susceptible to measles for more than 15 minutes, you got measles. I mean, and just being in the room with them, it doesn't mean touching. It doesn't mean direct droplet contact. So anyone who's known that reality of epidemiology, which has been around, we've known that for a long time, when they started putting up the plexiglass dividers, you know, you said that the caution tape around the playgrounds was, I thought the plexiglass dividers were the worst, but our producer, Allie, I got to admit, the circles in the public park for where to sit for social distancing in general may be the highest level order of stupidity of all of Fauciism, of the Fauciite religion. That may be as if you're really going to stay 6 feet apart from people meaningfully enough, consistently enough to do anything. And as if 6 feet would mean anything.
And what about the people who had those jobs measuring to make those circles in the parks, and you're walking around and you think that you are treating the virus seriously when, to your point, you have to walk through all of those people to find the absent square, right? Or the absent circle to be able to sit in, as if you aren't in any way spreading a virus that is aerosoled all throughout the park. I just, all of this one day is going to make for an incredible documentary. The hysteria that took over America in COVID is, our grandkids are not going to believe.
Oh yeah,
what happened.
Historians will look at primary source material about Fauci and the rest, and they'll say, how did this happen? How did this society, how did the world lose its mind over this so much? But don't worry, we're here to bring you all sanity. I'm going to go drink some tea with honey and wrap
Leave
a fancy scarf
on,
around
make sure
my
your
neck.
Throat's warm.
Yep, that's right. That's what we do here. And Clay's going to keep us rolling together tomorrow here on the Clay and Buck Show. Over and out, everybody.
You're listening to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.